Welcome to the You're Not Qualified podcast, where we obliterate mental roadblocks and embrace the challenge of endurance sports head on. From scaling the seven summits to mustering the courage for your first 5K, we're here to unravel what holds us back from the things that intimidate us. I'm your host, Courtney Heater, and together we transform I'm not qualified into I'm on my way. Join me twice a month, every first and third Thursday, as I sit down with individuals tackling extraordinary physical and mental feats without the conventional background. Whether they are diving into 100-mile races after just starting to run, or taking on volcanic climbs with zero hiking experience, these stories will ignite your own fire to confront your fears. We dive deep into the essence of self-belief and seizing your potential through conversations with visionary leaders. It's all served with a dose of empowerment because, hey, go do those hard things, you badass babe. Are you ready to get into this week's episode? Let's go. Okay, so this evening, a little bit later for you in New Orleans, we are here with Cole Williams. Cole Williams is a brilliant act in many different ways, singer-songwriter. She literally just opened for the Rolling Stones. We're going to get into that. And she also has a nonprofit that she runs. She founded Greater New Orleans Citizen Relief Team. And we're here to talk all about finding your purpose and also holding on to it and keeping it, along with a lot of other fun things. Thank you for being here, Cole.
Thank you for having me. I feel like there's so much to talk about, so I'm going to put it into a little nice box.
We love it. Let's bucket it up. Could you give us the elevator pitch for Greater New Orleans Citizen Relief Team to set the stage?
Sure. So the Greater New Orleans Citizens Relief Team is visioned and missioned to reclaim city-owned blighted properties with the houseless people that will live in them while teaching them a marketable skill. So we are not doing anything for people. We're not coming in with a magic wand. We're not starting off as a collective and then, okay, now it's going to go back to a hierarchy. We're saying we have the resources of privilege, whatever that privilege looks like. And we're coming to the bottom. Like, there is a humanity problem. So we're going to start it from scratch, from the bottom up, to the people that are most disposable, most disregarded, most disrespected. The homeless, the unhoused, the houseless, the displaced, as they prefer to be called. And we are going to ask them, what do they think that they need in order to have a better situation? So when I first started, not everybody said, we want a house. Some people were disinterested. To this day, some people are not interested. It's just like anything in life, right? Some people are interested, some people aren't. But really, it's not that they're interested. It's that there's so much trauma. It's not just because you're living on the street. It's how did you get there? So there's that whole story. So when someone like me, and for them, I'm very privileged, just like having clean clothes and having shoes, and I'm always in sunglasses. So having these big old shades on, I'm coming with privilege like, hey, I think I want to help you. And what do you need me to do to help? And how can I help? Who are you? So it was a lot of building trust. It still is building trust. And part of that trust is being consistent, keeping your word. If you can't keep your word, saying that you can't, the lifestyle is so transient, you may not bump into those people again. The beginnings and the endings are just as important, because those endings, you might think that it's a bridge, but it might actually be an ending. So long story longer, we are working with people in order to see how they would like us to help them build a better life for themselves. And so we start with housing. That's our focus. Mm. But you can focus on food equity. You can focus on education, mm-hmm. on mental health. But my passion is housing. Like, without those four walls and the base, you can't do anything.
Yeah, it's a need.
Yeah. Think about how you get up in the morning, how you wake up within those four walls, within these four walls, how I work from home, how I practice my piano. What would it look like if I'm on the street? I don't have electricity. I don't feel safe. Where can I store my things? I have to babysit my things all day.
You can't keep your food not spoiled. Like, you don't have a way to for refrigeration usually, especially in a very warm place like New Orleans.
That's right. Housing crisis is really global. So I'm based in New Orleans now, and we started during the pandemic. So first of all, I met this man named Curtis Muhammad, the late Curtis Muhammad. He passed away in 2022, but he is a 60-year civil rights veteran. So that man worked with Ella Baker. That man worked with Dr. Martin Luther King. That man is a founding member of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And I was asked to sing at a Martin Luther King Jr. celebration in January 2020. And when I
Wow.
finished singing my two songs, Wade in the Water and His Eyes on the Sparrow, both a cappella, I saw a man in all white with white hair, black man walking towards me with a cane. And I happened to be wearing all white too. And I had my blonde hair. And I don't normally wear all white, but for some reason I did. And he just walked over to me and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him. I'm wondering, why is this old man looking at me? He said, "Young lady, why did you choose those songs to sing?" And he was just curious. So he asked for my information. We exchanged. Maybe like a few days later, he sent me an email with a song by Sweet Honey in the Rock, Ella's song. And then he's not telling me who he is, but he's sending me these things that I'm thinking, oh, this is pretty interesting, a Nina Simone song. And we start speaking, and he's asking me how I started singing, why do I sing the music I'm singing? And all of this was because he's one of those elders that was like looking to just pour into somebody that like maybe had some humanity that he could link up with. Tells me a little bit about who he is, but says, "So, if you had to work with any group that is marginalized, like what group would that be? If you could do anything in the world, work with anybody." And I thought, and I said, "Homeless people." At that time, 2020, so short, but so far away, we're all still very comfortable saying homeless. I'm comfortable saying homeless. And I said, "Homeless people." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "I don't know why anybody is living on the street. There's no justifiable reason in my mind. I can't say because you're on drugs, you should live on the street. Because you are formerly incarcerated, you should live on the street." But that's like what we are agreeing to by allowing people to live on the street as a society. So he said, "What do you think we can do?" So figured I would put on a concert for the people under the bridge. And then he told me how to organize. You can't just go under the bridge where people are staying. You have to ask permission. You got to make community, build community. So I went and spoke to somebody. I was so nervous. Like I'd never spoken to houseless people because I don't know if like you came from this, like my family is super strict, super Christian, and everything was like fair. Don't do this. And so one thing I couldn't do is engage with people that might have a mental health issue or living on the street. And so I had this built-in fear I didn't know about until I had to go and speak to somebody. It went much better than I thought.
That's so
You know,
good.
I was myself. That's what the only thing I can do is be myself. So I said, "Hi, sir, my name is such and such. I'm an entertainer. And I thought maybe we can put on a concert for you under the bridge, but also maybe we can also get some things that you need, like toiletry kits or books or some food. What's your interest?" And he was interested and said, "But talk to this person over there." So I went and talked to somebody else. And anyway, long story longer, we put on that concert under the bridge with me. We rigged the electricity through a car charger that you and had food, books, toiletry kits. I played my bongos. I sang some songs. And I was like, "Oh my goodness, I love this. We're doing this every week. It's going to build, it's going to grow." And 1 week later to the date, the COVID pandemic stopped everything.
Oh, yeah.
So that was love under the bridge. So then I'm sitting here because all you have is time, right? You can't go anywhere. You can't see anyone. All we had is time. And I'm sitting here thinking, God didn't bring me to give a concert under the bridge with houseless folk to just like, all right, everybody out for themselves. They're doing much worse than I am. So we
Yeah.
started demonstrating. We started demonstrating in front of New Orleans City Hall with the houseless, with the long-term goal being that they have housing. We identified a house. We started working on it. We've had members, houseless members, working with us up to 6 months, which is incredible. Just about somebody that's living on the street in a tent, maybe doing some day work, and they are committed to working on Saturdays and Wednesdays or whatever the days we did for 6 months. So they felt the process helping them grow. Unfortunately, because we are reclaiming city-owned, which is citizen-owned, blighted property, and we're not saying, here, we're going to pay you money for it. We're using the resources available to build up our community. We've had certain members of the community try to shut us down. We've also, and my management team has also been in contact with some other housing groups, like in Philadelphia, who they got the go-ahead to be able to have tiny homes, and it got stopped. So there is a crisis happening where people are living on the street, but there's also a deeper crisis that there are some people that benefit from people not having. And so we need the people. That's why it's people run. We are grassroots. We have a 501c3 that we work with, but we are grassroots so that the people understand that whatever I can do, they can do. So it's transparent. I'm teaching them how to like separate groceries, how to bag groceries, where the groceries are donated from. Our youngest volunteer is 9 years old.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Took her, Jacqueline. So she's, you have those people you look up to. So I guess because I come in there with my leggings and my shades, she's, oh my God, Miss Cole. So I said, I got to take her, or not even I said, Spirit told me. Spirit said, she's open, she's receptive. Take her with you. So I took her with me to the gro to get groceries. Her mother said it was okay. Her mother couldn't make it. And I introduced her to everybody. I said, this is little Jackie. She's my best helper. When she gets her driver's license, she's going to be doing this. Ha. But oh my goodness, ever since that day, now that I'm speaking to you, she has taken such ownership, like on another level. So now she's helping me train other new volunteers.
Oh, I love that. Is she 8 or something now? What was
She's
the?
nine,
She's
and
nine.
she'll be 10, like 10 probably in August.
My gosh, she's brilliant. What a future. That's
So this is
incredible.
wonderful work because the community is building, rebuilding, replenishing, renewing itself, which is what we have always done.
I love it. It's so inspiring. And one thing that really stuck out to me is when you're approaching these houseless folks, and the one where you're like, I asked him what his interests were. And it did trigger for me too, because you grew up maybe with the stigma of those people without homes, you stay away from them, they don't give them money, they're going to spend it on drugs, all of that. So it made me like wonder why that was so precious to me, because I think I would also be not naturally inclined to ask what the interests are of them, because they don't have their necessities taken care of. But of course they have interests. They're people. And it's like talking to them like they're human beings is so important.
You got it. That's it. The biggest hurdle for new volunteers in this work, in my experience, is humanizing the house. Everybody, they love what I'm doing. They believe in it. I believe that they believe in it. And I believe that they want to come and work and volunteer. And they come. And then it's time to start speaking to people. And you feel it. You don't even see it. You feel it. And if I can feel it, they can feel it. And the best thing that someone can do is just be honest, be nervous, be uncomfortable. Say hi, what's your name? Introduce yourself. But I also think if it's not easy for you to make friends, just in general, this is also going to be just like a challenge. So I think the best things in life happen when we challenge ourselves. I know they have for me, where I think that there's an obstacle. But then when I just start to unpack that obstacle, because I'm just like, I got to do this thing, you realize, oh, it's not an obstacle. These are things that have been formed in my like early childhood. These are not even my thoughts. This is like somebody else from that thing that I don't even care about. And so there are really no obstacles. They're just learning experiences. And so I think that if we can all work with, speak to, humanize a houseless person, it's like bottom-up organizing. You are going through the depths of where you are most uncomfortable. And it works the same way, I just find, in every space, that we got to get to the root. So when we get to the root, so when we humanize these people, these houseless folks, these displaced people, just unfortunate circumstance, and we haven't figured out as a global community how to support people that fall into unfortunate circumstances without the need to pay back. So you got to talk to them and just saying hi. And sometimes, like, they're really open. It just depends on who you meet, just like any other person. And I've seen just like people just open up because they allowed themselves to humanize a houseless person and open themselves up to a real interaction and realize that it was their own fear or their own implicit bias or whatever it is that got in the way of. Does that mean it's long term that they're going to show up every week? No, but these are the little things, like little transactional things that happen that hopefully you take that spirit of community. Now you're a little better, you bring it with you somewhere else.
Before you met that man that kind of helped set the wheel in motion, the man in white, and realized that you can do this and pursue your passion, what were you doing before, and about when did you realize that your passion was helping the houseless?
Muhammad is like a breakthrough person. I think we have breakthrough moments and breakthrough people. And I didn't know it then. I did know, but I didn't know like the kind of breakthrough. But he's a breakthrough person that, and I say breakthrough because breakthrough people help you take what you already got and build upon it into being the best thing that you can be. And then also, how does that affect everybody around you? So I think all my life, I've been helping people. I started teaching my first piano lesson at 15. I always remember being centered around like how people got along. I thought it was very important that people got along. I didn't understand why people didn't get along. At a very early age, I saw the beginnings of gossip and conflict and how silly it was. And I saw adults behaving badly, and I never wanted to be that person. So I was very mindful, like from a really young age, of I want to live an existence that's balanced. My father gave me the gift of music. So I've been playing piano since I was 4 to 17, classical piano, like recitals and church and Carnegie Hall and stuff like that. And I had no idea. And he had no idea that this is a career. So this is, let me keep you off the streets. Let me keep your mind balanced. But I've been singing in church, and my whole family sings, but nobody does it professionally. And I went to school, I went to college for psychology, and I thought, I can't be in these four walls like just all day with no motion. I got to pursue my passion. So my passion became like singing and writing and expressing and emoting and figuring it out, rubbing, not getting it, and going through life experiences and singing about like the struggle of heartbreak, the struggle of being betrayed by best friends and frenemies. And so I've always been singing about a struggle and a real struggle and a struggle that's global. But Curtis Mohammed working with the houseless, that shifted me into being less self-serving and more community serving. Because what I realized is that if we do community serving, we really do self-serving, like self-healing through service, self-development through service. I remember volunteering, and this is during the pandemic, right? I lost all my work, no job, no gigs. I'm a singer. I'm like, whoa, what did I do? I should have gotten a tech IT job. I'd be working. But I just started listening to music that I grew up with, and I started writing and composing, and that's how I came up with this Give Power to the People album. And I took all these experiences that I had with the houseless and tried to give a snapshot. And then I realized I think I'm good at this, merging my worlds. I've always had multiple worlds. I merge these worlds where I'm singing and I'm singing about a struggle, but the struggle is like a struggle that everybody can like take something from and do something with. It's not if you haven't been through heartbreak, you can't relate to me. Everybody can relate to wanting to get in touch with their humanity, I think, if you're human. So for me,
Robots need not apply, everybody.
it's only for the people that are willing participants. But for me, what I'm creating is this DIY. How can we get in touch with our humanity? When we get in touch with our humanity, we'll get better. And I've seen it happen on a really small scale with this neighborhood because everybody's invested in cleaning up and groceries are being bagged there. And so there's accountability. Miss Cole is coming once a week with garbage bags. And I'm going to say something. I'm not going to be nasty about it, but I'm going to be firm. If something is not right, you got to treat the woman with respect. This is not a dating site, it's a work site. Don't try to date people here, guys. All of that happens. And so I've seen in 4 years where this block that where there's no police presence, there still is no police presence. That block is safe. That little girl rides her bike on that block. She couldn't do that before. So it's just nice. It's nice to know at least something, one thing I'm doing. We're not perfect. I'm not perfect. But at least one thing that I'm doing that I enjoy doing for myself. I love singing. I love helping people that I can do it for others and share the process. That's uplifting.
It is. It's a blessing. And then you're going around and sharing it even wider on podcasts. You can reach more people and you
Like yours.
get
Thank
on
you.
magazine covers. And it's just incredible. And I think like the sky is not even the limit for you. I think it's maybe Mars, but
Read the stars. Well, I'll say this,
yeah.
Courtney. I think it's a privilege to be experiencing everything that I'm experiencing now, even the struggle. That's a privilege because I can relate to people. But it's a privilege to be on a magazine cover and talk about what I'm doing and reach some more people. It's a privilege to perform at a show and be able to talk about it so I can reach more people. So I don't think I would be blessed to be here if it wasn't good work. So I am focused and I'm mindful always, just because that's who I am. But if I want to reach more people, I got to make sure that I'm doing it the best that I can. And that's always sticking at the bottom, always uplifting from the bottom, always making sure that I'm working with houseless folk and low-income folk.
And you can tell it just sets your soul on fire. So it was just like a matter of time till you really found your passion. So maybe like a piece of advice for people listening. To find their passion and pursue it, even if they're still in school, don't let things get in your way. Find your fire and see what helps you want to lift people up, like what inspires you. Do you have any other advice for people?
Yeah, don't reinvent the wheel. At first, I wanted to reinvent the wheel. I want to save the world, but there's so many holes that need clogging, that need corking, right? So you don't have to go into another direction, but it's for me thinking about the things that you're passionate about individualistically. If you're an artist, what do you love to paint? What do you love to take pictures of? Think about all the things that you like to do. And then what in those things can help someone else? So I know for me, my writing, the way that I write, because I love reading and I love writing. So now, like, I've become a better writer because I've stuck to it. But when I write for upliftment, and so people seem to be touched by it, wow, let me focus more and write a little bit more about these experiences that I know can really help my singing. Sometimes people cry at shows, and I'm just singing from my heart. Sometimes I feel it. So then I say, wow, if this thing that I do, it pays my bills, because I just want to say also, I don't make any money from this work I do with the houseless. It's all volunteer organizing my gift to humanity. So I have to make money singing, performing, selling this music, selling my coasters. I have a new line of coasters.
You have a new line. Beautiful. We'll put the link in the bio.
Okay, sidebar footnote. Wow, I love singing and I've worked at it and I love playing piano and I've worked at it and people enjoy it. How nice would it be? I found a way to share that with people. I'm singing songs like Give Power to the People and Sign of the Times and Dear Love, that's my love letter to humanity. And we need a song inspired by Curtis Mohammed that literally said to me about a year and a half before he passed, Cole, we need a song. The people need a song to set them on fire, something to uplift them. Like he said this to me, he wrote it to me. And last year I wrote the song. And so it's out
Oh.
now. So yeah, find something that you're good at and that you love. And if it makes you feel good, see if it makes somebody else feel good. And then if you can do it without having a transaction like money, if you can serve without the thought of receiving, fill those three things, those three boxes. You can do it. I served when I felt like I wasn't in a position to serve. I served when I was thinking, how am I going to pay this bill? Who am I to be working with houseless folk? And I went out there and served. I said, I got something. I got a house. I got four walls. And that's the blessing.
Absolutely. Do you think that the housing crisis in the New Orleans area has gotten better since Hurricane Katrina? Because I know that absolutely did not help. And was that kind of like around, it was years and years ago though, so it might have been like too young to really have the thoughts then of this is setting an emotion a little bit, but what's the relation there?
That's an interesting question. Full transparency, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. I choose to live in New Orleans. So I've been living in New Orleans for about 10 years now. So I wasn't in New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina happened. And out of respect to New Orleans and New Orleanians that have experienced it, I'm not going to say too much about it because that was being here. Once you come here, you can't imagine how Fats Domino was on the roof of his home waiting to be rescued. Fats Domino, the legend, he just passed away. Rock and roll legend Fats Domino was living in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina and was on the top of his roof waiting to be rescued. That is tragic. So there are a lot of former musicians that do live under the bridge and culture bearers, or I can't even say former, current musicians, my apology. Culture bearers, people that are part of different communities in the city that possibly Hurricane Katrina might have cited some of that. I definitely think that poverty, lack of education, think there are formulas, recipes to certain situations. It's not just how do they get on the street? Oh my goodness. How do
There's
they?
not one thing.
But yeah, there are different formulas, there are different recipes. There's several. And part of that is being incarcerated. Part of that is poverty. Part of that is mental health. And we haven't figured out a way to address that for people without getting a check. So I think in New Orleans, I have seen the conversation. I'm very inspired in New Orleans because I saw a lot of people, activists that were activists before I became an activist and organizer. They ratcheted up. They became more in the movement. I saw people like myself that maybe weren't in the movement actively that started to get into it. I noticed the conversation and the language around homelessness changed to unhoused and then changed to housed. I've seen that in the span of 2020 to 2024 in New Orleans. I've seen it affect the nation and the world. I've noticed. I've been watching. I watch. I gotta see. What's happening? Are we affecting? So we're affecting food, culture, music. Yeah, I think things are getting better. Rome wasn't built in a day, so I think it's very hard for people to change. I think it's hard for people to add on to systems. When you start adding on, people think that their system might be removed or moved. When we add on, when we evolve, we have to evolve with the times, and our times call for us to really treat and address houselessness. Displaced people, poor people, low income people that are not highly educated. There are a bunch of groups of people that we need to start regarding better. And so I'm saying let's start with the bottom. Because once you lift the bottom, the very bottom, naturally, it's science. Everything bumps up. So for me, this is about the science of humanity. And if we're about the science of humanity, we have to apply what's happening in modern times to how we practice it.
Yeah. What is that saying? It's all ships rise with the tide or something like that.
I don't know, but I like it.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's like all
I can
ships
see
rise
that.
with the tide. So
Yeah.
it's like the swell of movement, everything will come up.
Absolutely. I think about rice. Before I learned how to cook rice, I burned the bottom. In order to clean it, I had to soak it. And then when you soak that rice, what happens? You scoop the whole thing up.
Exactly, all in one piece.
The all-in-one piece, so all-in-one humanity. It sounds, I know people think it sounds too optimistic. It sounds like we can't do it, inconceivable. Everything that we have today started with a dream that everybody said cannot be done, is impossible. And I don't know why humanity is impossible.
It's impossible to them. It's not impossible to you. Their impossible is not our impossible.
Absolutely. I believe it's possible because it's happening now. If I'm here talking to you, it's happening.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. 100%. You're making it happen.
We are trying. It's not me by myself. It is me. It is the spirit of Curtis, the spirit of my houseless volunteer that passed away last year, Mimi Madinoff. It is the spirit of Jacqueline, the little Jackie, that has helped
No.
every week. All of the houseless persons we have worked with today, will work with in the future. It's the spirit of people that just come in. Sometimes folks say, "Do you need help?" It's the spirit of everybody that shows up. It's us. It's not a me thing.
Yeah.
So.
So as a nonprofit founder, is it what would you say, I guess, is the more difficult part of running a nonprofit? Because there's so many working pieces here. Like it's the folks that you're helping, it's the folks that you're trying to bring in for food resources, maybe for land resources, probably the local government. What would you say is a difficult part?
It's all, if I think about the work, I think it all might be a little challenging for somebody that's not used to it. So we're not getting paid. Everything is initiative, self-starting. Saturdays are early. Some of us are waking up at 6 a.m. To get groceries. So this is like a 6 a.m. to possibly 10 a.m. morning. And then you have the rest of your day. The communication that happens between myself and the houseless, or myself and food partners, or city government, or the conversations that are not happening between me and city government and food partners. So all of those things, I think all of those things can be challenging. I have to always, this is the perk, now this is the main thing, I have to always work on not taking things personally. I have to always work on seeing the lesson, understanding that life is a lesson. Always
My God,
remember,
me too. Wow.
it is really a lesson. Like every time I have that, I don't want to do this anymore, whatever it is. And then I stop, and my uncle, or like my father, or one of my mentors will say, "Life is a lesson," or they'll say it inadvertently. You see, I just sighed. It's, yeah, life is a lesson. Because I'm a woman of faith, I also believe in God. So that is very helpful for me. Not that I'm assigning God things to do for me, but what I'm saying is that I have deep faith that I believe in divine timing. And God working through the right people at the right time. So I have faith about that. So, challenges. Every day is pretty much a challenge that I'm flipping. But the best part for me is getting the text message from Jacqueline on a Friday. "Miss Cole, are you coming tomorrow or Saturday morning? Miss Cole, are you on your way?" Seeing more people volunteer, seeing the same volunteers, the low income or the houseless volunteers, seeing them come repeatedly, consistently, that's big. Having a real conversation with one of those partners, that's big for me. I think everything else is workable. A real challenge, I think, with any nonprofit is retention, especially volunteers, people that are like serving. So, not people like me that are spearheading and I have a dream and I have a vision, but the people that say, "Wow, I could have thought of that, and I believe in that. I believe in what you're doing and how you're doing it, and I'm going to sign up to do this with you and join in." So, like, how do you retain them, and how do you continue to build their momentum and their consistency? How do you create that collective dynamic? How do you stop the hierarchy? The place that I have to really work with stopping a hierarchy from happening is with my housed volunteers. It's very easy to relate to my low income and my houseless. I'm very open. They're very ready to give feedback. What's going to work, what's not. We're working. Some of our houseless volunteers that don't quite understand how to work as a collective yet. They don't understand how to respect Black leadership, Black female leadership. So we're getting into all these isms. That's what happens, right, when you're serving. And when you're serving and you're working as a collective with a group of people. So I've been the recipient of all of these things. That's why I can say it to you. So it's not nice. So what are we going to do? Those are teaching moments. Those are teaching lessons. And what I'm sharing with you, this is what I've been trained to do. So I'm coming with the spirit. I came open, but I'm trained in the Ella Baker style of organizing. This is how they learned how to organize with the poor Black folk in the 60s in Mississippi when they came from the North. They thought they were going to come and integrate lunch counters. Reintegrated lunch counters were going to jail. That's what they said. This is the story my mentor Curtis told me. This is what the movement he's a part of. And when they came from the North to the South, they were told to see Miss Ella Baker. And Miss Ella Baker said, "Yeah, that's great what y'all are doing, integrating lunch counters, going to jail. Why don't y'all go and see what the people want?" Remember, Curtis told me to see what the people want? Okay. She told them what communities to go to and sent them out there, just like Curtis sent me out there, knocking on doors. And so the consensus came to be, the people said, "Yeah, that's nice what y'all are doing, but what we really want is the right to vote." So then the right to vote happened. And then, in order to teach people how to vote, or get people to vote, remember, they had to know how to read. And a lot of these people were like recently, some of them was, right? This is Jim Crow. People are still enslaved. People the color of my skin, we can't have this conversation in the 60s. So what we're doing right in California is big. So this is what I'm doing now. This is what they were doing. And that's how they humbled themselves and they went to the people. So they're living. You have white people living with black people that never lived with a black person, never talked to one. You have black people that never spoke to a white person without calling them sir or ma'am, like an equal. Just the work built bridges and burned ones that needed to be burned. So the Greater New Orleans Citizens Relief Team, the more I do this, is the more I realize just the act of us being out there every Saturday distributing groceries, over 40,000 bags we've distributed since 2021. Just the act of us being out there, still having the discussion about housing as a right, as a human right, just us being out there is a peaceful demonstration. And so many people's lives are being affected just by us being out there. What do I want to do? I want us to take over every empty lot in the city of New Orleans and every city in the US and every city and state all over the world so that there are no houseless people anywhere. That's my dream. That's my goal. That's what it is. However, we are hitting SMART goals every week, every day. That line. The line that's grown for groceries, the walk-ups, the line when I drive up under the bridge that they recognize my car. Even though there's still people that need things, the fact that they know that there's a bridge, there is somebody, there's some skinny black lady, that's what they call me, the skinny black nice lady. There's some people, not just me, there are a bunch of people. Some of them have a bus, a school bus, where they convert it into a shower and give haircuts. There's a lot of good stuff going on. People are utilizing the resources available and without being asked, without wanting to be noticed or recognized for it, like without wanting to be organized or activists of the year, people are doing it. So there are bridges being built that I don't even know that are being built. So I got to keep doing it. I want to keep doing it. I should keep doing it.
You
So it
should.
makes me happy. It makes me happy. It makes other people happy. So it's like the thing that Curtis taught me to do. We got to share our gifts, skills, resources, and talents with the least of us, not just with the us of us, with the least. And that's how we build.
How has this influenced the direction of your music? You've mentioned that you've written a lot of very applicable songs. How has it really influenced you, and has it completely changed the way that you think about songwriting?
It's evolved it. So one of the best things about doing this is that I haven't become a different person. I've just transformed. That makes sense. Transformation, I think transformation can be difficult for sometimes for the people around you that aren't ready for the transformation. Because I feel the same. I feel like certain things are different, but I feel pretty much the same. So the songs for me just feel a little better. But if I look at it with more of a critical eye, the songs are much better. They're well written. The composition is better. The quality, the subject matter, the discussion happening, the stories, what people can take out for their own. Because once I put out the music, it's not really mine anymore. It's ours. A lot more people have access to a lot more messages in my music now. I think my music has a lot more focus. I'm not all over the place, like singing about a bunch of different things. Not that isn't fine, but I like being focused because
Yeah.
music is genreless. I don't know what genre it is. I'm just making it feels like an evolution of freedom music. Like freedom music is the music that like they sang on the plantation or in the house or in the back of the bus or even being free, that singing on their own land, like freedom music, Sweet Honey and the Rocks sing freedom music, and Nina Simone and Gil Scott-Heron. And so I think I'm blessed to recognize that I can sing freedom music. So I think that's like the difference. And I guess it is much different. Yeah, it's because my music always reflects my life. I'm one of those artists. I'm not like a totally different person. I'm a private person, but I'm the same person. So as I've transformed my music, it's also transformed. I'm playing piano on the stage, and I've never played piano on the stage. I just used it for composition. I would play bongos. I want to move.
Yeah.
I want to get up in your face. I want to get down, but I'm being able to move and dance a little bit differently now.
Yeah, I think that you say that you're, yeah, the private person, but I feel like you share parts of your heart that will influence in the greatest way. So I think that's such a beautiful way to be a private person because you give a lot, but you hold some for yourself, obviously. Like you wouldn't just tell us everything,
I
every
can't give what
deep
I don't have,
part.
so we're overflowing. You got the
Yeah.
spill over, but that's really well said. I never thought about it like that, but yeah, like I share the things that I think maybe people can share with. If you feel inspired by me, don't go out and buy the same outfit I have, and then
It's a great top.
yeah. But be inspired by my character. So that's like what I try to lead with. The character is everything. It really is. I hire my band based on character. The people that I work with, it's based on characters, nothing else. Like I'll walk away and I'll say no, no hate, no harm. I'm not saying anything negative because everybody has the right to be. But I know what works for me, and it's like that character. So that loving spirit, that humanity spirit.
What did you open with for the Rolling Stones? What did you sing so people can look up at least those songs if they want to be honed in and then they can explore from there?
Yeah, we started with sign. Oh, yeah, we started with "Sign of the Time." It's by the Cole Williams Band. It's not the Prince version, and I totally forgot Prince has a version of "Sign of the Times."
I was like, I definitely have heard that before,
Yeah,
that
so
time.
but "Sign of the Times," and for me, it's like this feel-good song. It's you want me to sing a little bit?
Yes.
Okay, I'll sing as much as I remember. There's a time in our lives when you stand, when you fight, when you protect what is right. Oh, no more standing on the side. Lines are getting longer. The least of ours are stronger. Whoa, what they do to you? Whoa. They do to me. Someone has to care right now. And what you think is what you do. What you say is how you move. Now is the time to live as one. These are the signs. These are the signs. Said these are the signs. Oh, of the world we're living in. So that's a snippet. But it feels like when I write music, when I write and compose music, and then I'm listening to it and I know it can be taken out of the oven, like it's ready to be presented, I see it. Like I see movement, almost like music video, like treatment. So this one, this is like everybody in the world. Just walk in, and we might not look at each other, but we're feeling each other. We might touch, whatever it is, we're connecting, and everything is all right. That's what I see. So I wrote it based on this work, like looking at people living on the street, but I said maybe I can be that person and pass it on. And like the signs of the times that we're talking about it, that we're having the conversation, it's a good thing. It's not a negative thing to speak about the houseless. It's not good if we don't do anything about it.
Getting the conversation started gets the movement started. That's, you can't do much if you're, nobody's talking about it. Exactly. Wow, that was really beautiful. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had anybody sing for me before on this.
That one, it was better if I sang it. I can't really talk about the songs unless I sing. Yeah. This is just a wonderful time, I think, in our humanity. I think people are struggling, quite honestly. I feel it, I see it. Like people that I wouldn't think are struggling. People are struggling. Things are uncertain. We just came out of a pandemic. We were isolated. I think we were pushed back into work and normalcy, but we are all suffering from some form of trauma that I think we need to really make the space and take some time to understand. And then I'm saying within all of this, not to say we're better than that person, but within all of this, there's still that group of people that haven't moved. They just stayed living, stayed standing, stayed sitting, stayed sleeping on the street. And that doesn't look good. It doesn't feel good. What does it say about us that we're comfortable with having a group of people just there that we ignore? So I think that I'm not the only one. I know I'm not the only one. So I don't mind being that person that you don't want to invite to the party because here's Cole again talking about them houseless people. But I know at least one person is listening that there is such beauty in our stories. There's so much wisdom in our stories. And getting to work with houseless folk and getting to know their stories and humanizing them is such development for us as people. Now we can work together. Now I know you. Now there's a name. Now you're not just that guy. Now you're Bradley. Now you're Tina. Now you're Miss Karen with the grandson named such and such that's in the first grade, right?
Yeah, they have families.
Right. So it's a lot more, we become a little more accountable. So I think struggle is real. Without struggle, there wouldn't be freedom and this freedom music, right? So struggle comes learning. We just can't fight the struggle when it's hitting us in the face that we have to move in a positive direction. And so here we are. We're at this crossroads in humanity. Literally and figuratively, we are at this crossroads looking at people, looking at places and spaces, and we're saying we can move in this direction and continue just going the same way we've been going in our routine. Or we can look, or we can take a moment to smell the roses. And just take some of these people with us into this beautiful like world, this beautiful rose garden. Let's get rid of the weeds.
Let's get rid of the weeds. I was going to ask if you had any like last words of wisdom, but I think that was perfect. That's like basically everything in a nutshell of find a purpose, don't shy away from action, don't shy away from talking about hard things, and let it light you up and do something about it.
Take action. Be
Take
action.
action. Yeah.
We are better together. That's what I know.
Absolutely. Cole, thank you so much for sharing your whole self with us. And this has been so exciting and fun. And I really appreciate it, especially that song. That was really
Thank
special. Thank
you
you.
for letting me talk for like how long? An
It's
hour?
about an hour. I just don't
Thank you
want
for letting me talk for an hour.
to take more of your time. No, thank you. Seriously.
And I just want to say, please follow the Greater New Orleans Citizens Relief Team. If you believe in anything that I said today, the music, anything, go follow the movement first. GNO, citizensreliefteam.org. Everywhere else, New Orleans Citizens Relief Team.
And I will put all of that in the notes as well as your music.
Thank you.
So go do that shit that scares you. Deal? Deal. And reach out to me to tell me all about it. Find all of my socials below in the show notes or look up Imposter Courtney and you will find me. If you want to get in touch with the guest, their contact info is in the show notes as well. If you think you would make a great guest or if you know of someone else who would, please get in touch. I would love to share your story or their story. If this episode really inspired you to get out there and do all of those things you don't think you can do, or you want others to also be inspired, please like, subscribe, and share. Your support means the world to me, and this would be fruitless without you. Now get out of here and go do those things that scare you. Bye.